Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with a Man City Show podcast regular, the tradition, Nigel Rothband. And once again, delighted to say Dave Hodgson has joined us in the studio. Massive show for you. We're going to be talking about that game on the weekend, 2-2 against Newcastle. What happened for Pep's men then? Newcastle, one of the teams to beat City last year. Well, they seemingly have their number because they got a point on the weekend as well. Lots to talk about from that game. We'll also focus our attentions on the Champions League. City winning that group despite the draw with Shakhtar Donetsk. You know, maybe is that the aim, the Champions League this year, more so than getting the three-peat in the Premier League, because it is 11 points off for Man City as December begins. We're going to be talking a little bit about all of Man City, how they have become the most valuable football club in the world, valued at over $3 billion. I know Dave will have lots to say. And then we will look towards the game tomorrow night with Burnley, and we get to speak to another Dave, this time Dave Roberts from the No Nay Never podcast. So much to be getting into. Nigel, 2-2, not the result you wanted, but maybe let's start on a positive. Kevin De Bruyne, goal of the season already.
It's going to be lost, isn't it, potentially? If that had been a winning goal, I think we could have been talking about that for weeks, but what a player. And he just sort of took it down and he hit it like an arrow, and in the one place, I don't think any goalkeeper in the world would have stopped that. Fantastic player. And shame that we didn't have all 11 putting in a performance like the one he put in. It was a disappointing result. We kind of got the lead and lost it twice. And, you know, if you're going to be champions, you can't afford to do that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have one of the producers here is a Newcastle fan. He, speaking to him as the game was on, he said to me, as soon as that Kevin De Bruyne goal went in, he said, not even fussed about losing it. He said, to lose this game to a goal of that quality, he said, unbelievable. He said, deservedly should win any game. Obviously, wasn't the case, Dave, but just a moment of pure, pure magic.
Well, when you're in St James's Park in the away end, you're so high up, you have no idea how high the ball is. We had no idea until we heard this deafening thwack. And for it to be deafening in the third tier, you know what you've just seen? You hear this thwack as it hits the underside of the bar, bounces down. Stunning finish. I couldn't really work out quite how stunning until I saw it back, but every time I watch it, you know, how he's hit it, it's still rising. It's just a stunning, stunning, brilliantly sweet strike. And I don't think there are many players in the Premier League who could do that.
Yeah, I have to say, De Bruyne is probably my Premier League favourite, if I'm allowed favourites. Of course I am. It's out there now. Just a genuine, genuine moment of brilliance. Not a moment of brilliance where the result was concerned, though. Not a brilliant result. 2-2, Nigel. What are your thoughts overall on this one?
Well, listen, clearly disappointed, you know, and you made the point at the start, Charlie. We went there last year, got the early goal from Aguero, and they came back. And you have to, again, and I keep saying this week in, week out, when we're dropping points, you've got to give credit to Newcastle. You know, Steve Bruce set them up really well. Couple of banks, as you'd expect. They worked their socks off. We had, 77% possession, something like that, which is, again, a ridiculous figure to have. And I suppose it's the same old story, Charlie. You know, we're not scoring goals, enough goals. We had enough possession. We had enough shots in that game to win that game. We had our chances. The one at the end that fell to Sterling, you know, Gabriel Jesus had his chances. You know, they all had their chances. And we're not putting them away. And we're conceding too many goals. You know, you said that the De Bruyne goal was a cracking goal. But But again, you've got to give credit. What a brilliant free kick. City's all backing off there. They were all in the 2 minutes to go. We're all in the penalty area. And they knock it sideways. And Shelvey's hit a cracker again in just the right place. And they probably deserve their point at the end the way they played. So really disappointed. You know, it was kind of a must-win game, that old cliche. And they're all must-win games now. We've already lost too many. We've drawn too many. And Liverpool don't look like losing. You know, they're turning in these results. They're getting the rub of the green, as we say. And yeah, they're at the moment 11 points. I'm not writing it off yet. If you're going to press me on that, I don't believe it's finished. I would never write off a Pep team until mathematically we can't win it. But it's a very, very high mountain to climb.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting any less before we get to that 11 point gap. Dave, Nigel mentions it there. City switching off for Shelvey's goal, but it was sort of when I watched the game, you know, and then the De Bruyne goal, I thought it reminded me back of the Leicester game when Company scored all that possession. It was going to take a moment of brilliance. Nigel mentioned it's 77% possession. For all the chances, it would fall to a cracking goal like that. Wasn't to be. How disappointing is it that when City did score, Newcastle almost pegged them back instantly, especially with the first goal, conceding 3 minutes straight away afterwards, Dave?
I think it was sort of emblematic of the broader problems we've had in terms of concentration, in terms of players just not doing the little bits extra they've been doing the last few seasons. So, you know, you could argue, Shelvey, we know what he can do. We know the sort of threat he has. We should have someone directly on him for that set piece. You could sort of see that was an option they may well go for. Again, there's a little bit you can kind of go, well, you know, we are not great with set pieces. We're particularly vulnerable in the air. Maybe the focus more was on, let's just not mess this up. Let's make sure we've got everyone dealt with in the box. But still, a top team should be preempting those sort of risks. But, you know, we even talk further up the pitch. There's just these little things that aren't quite knitting together. You know, people are maybe getting a bit of a sense that you can let City have extended periods of possession. And those periods of possession can be, you know, in essence, futile because you've got them where you want them. You've got them sort of passing it around these banks. No one's sort of getting into those half spaces in the way that, you know, David Silva, Bernardo Silva have been known to do. Riyad Mahrez hasn't quite been able to get in there and make these spaces. So, you know, these little bits of things that we've been doing that have differentiated us over the last couple of seasons just aren't quite coming off at the moment. And I think we've got too many players who aren't quite hitting that metric, and that's really contributed. And that's why we're having these mistakes. That's why we're not maybe just putting on those, you know, putting on those afterburners when we go 2-1 up to make sure that we really sew games up.
Yeah, for all the possession, Nigel, you're not breaking any teams down, you know, you're not surgically tearing them apart. Possession is one thing, but you need to do something with it, passing alongside the banks. And, you know, Pep team will always get praise for possession and, you know, the goals they score and the way they go about it. But he mentioned in his post-match conference, he said, yeah, we scored 2 goals, but we conceded 2 goals. This is a big, big worry. Nigel, how big is the worry?
Well, of course, it's a huge worry. And I think I've said before, and you know this, Charlie, that when you look at the previous 2 seasons that we've just come out of, breaking all records, it's very difficult to keep that momentum going. But there's no question that we are underperforming versus those two. And I don't think there's one single reason. I think you can look right across the park. We know across the back we've had to change, certainly the centre-backs. But something that we talked on the Man City Show podcast this week ourselves was this whole issue of Fernandinho, who's had to be used as one of our emergency centre-backs. And he's been so important in that sort of defensive midfield role. He's now disappeared from that. So that has had a knock-on effect. He was so influential, you know, sweeping up and getting the ball and distributing it and allowing those creative midfielders and the wingers to get on and the full-backs bombing on. All the things that we've enjoyed from City. So I do think Fernandinho's absence from that function, if you like, has been one of the critical factors. Okay, we've got Sane as well, is not there, the leadership of Company, all these other things, you know, we haven't got a recognised left back, Mendy's not good enough, you know, the list is endless, but it's still a pretty talented side when you look across that. You look at that front three we had out, it's not a bad front three. Gabriel Jesus tends to score every time he's out there. Okay, he's had a bad run the last 7 or 8 games, but it's not a bad team. We've got strength in depth, but I do think Fernandinho playing in that centre-back position is not helping us.
Well, it was him that committed the foul for Shelvey's equaliser, and, you know, just trying to bring him down there, but, you know, maybe a bit naively so, Dave.
I don't think naive is quite the word. I mean, we've had this at City for pretty much my entire lifetime. I remember Richard Dunn making these mistakes covering for Micah Richards. We had, you know, Vincent Kompany's been known to make these mistakes, these sort of tackles as well when he's kind of feeling a bit overstretched. Fernandinho has somehow, having not played centre-half as far as I'm aware before he came to City, he has become the senior centre-half in a partnership. He is, he's having to stretch himself. He's maybe being a bit overstretched and he has to make challenges like that. I think the problem is, you know, Nigel's right, we miss him at holding mid, but we'd miss him a lot more if we didn't have him at centre-half right now, because the weaknesses we've got there, Otamendi, we all know, isn't good enough. Stones needs that sort of leadership that Fernandinho is offering in that position, which Kompany offered last season. That's where he's really substituting for Kompany, is that leadership. But it's sad that, you know, Gundogan's not the same player as Fernandinho. He's not going to be as aggressive in the tackle. Rodri is, but he hasn't quite got himself in the pace of the Premier League yet. So you've got lots of different factors that mean there's talented options who can replace Fernandinho at holding midfield, but they're not quite giving us that same, maybe that same dynamism that we get from him.
Well, Nigel said it's 11 points. He will never write off a Pep team. I'm not asking you to write off your own team, David, but this is a big gap. Are you still saying City are in this title race?
No.
You're not?
I think Liverpool will drop more points. Sorry, will drop more points than Liverpool between now and the end of the season.
Nigel just gave me a look to say you might be dropped from this podcast. He can't believe it. You've just said that. He's gutted.
David who? Sorry, who are we talking about? He's history, mate. History.
Gone. Unbelievable. Yep. That was a test and you failed, David.
Who'd have had odds on Marco Silva outlasting me at the start of the evening? You know,
no, let's be fair. It is a huge gap, 11. Do you know what? I don't think it's over. I'm not just saying this because we're on the Man City show. There's always twists and turns. We are in December. I know everyone could go, Liverpool unstoppable at the minute. Where will they drop these 11 points? But they crumbled last year when they had a big gap. I know it's slightly bigger this time, but stranger things have happened, David.
Let me flip the question round.
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool could drop points, absolutely. Mm. But you're also assuming there that Manchester City are not going to go and drop more. And right now, I just don't see I can't see us going, you know, having the sort of run we had towards the end of last season.
Yeah.
Because something's missing there, and it's going to take something fairly monumental to turn it around.
11 points.
Here he comes.
Are you ready? Stato's in the room. You ready?
I knew that'd fire him up.
Yeah, pin your ears back. Listen to this. Three times a team have overhauled a deficit as big or bigger. Arsenal were 13 points behind Stretford. Yeah, at the top in December. That was 97 after
97, 98, remember.
Yeah, right.
Double winners, FA Cup as well.
Yeah, you would remember that. Stretford were also 12 points off Norwich City in December 92 after 17 games. And 12 points off Newcastle in January 96 after 23 games. So it's certainly not over.
I love that.
It is not over. And Dave Hodgson is over, but the title race is not over, Charlie.
Well, there you have it. The title race is not over. Dave Hodgson is over. What do you make of it? Please help Dave. He needs defence. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. I tell you what's not over. That is City in the Champions League. They may be putting all their eggs in this basket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Love Sport.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Nigel Rothband and a guest that we're not quite sure who he is, but he's here for the next hour. I'm kidding, of course it is David Hodgson. He has a long chance to redeem himself on the show, but Nigel needs to redeem himself also. But we are talking about City in the Champions League. Obviously won last week. Five point gap. They're going to win the group. So no matter, you know, the next game is a dead rubber. And that's important because top seeds, you know, you play the second seeds, David. How important is that top seed?
I think, to give you a bit of a cop-out answer, it really depends who's coming second in the other groups.
Very true.
But I think it does give us an advantage. I would not say we have taken to the Champions League particularly well. And I don't just mean the fan base. The way in which the... You know, I've had many people say that the big downfall for City has been that they're not quite a two-legged tie kind of team. So really getting that edge early on in, you know, who we're drawing, if we have an easier draw in the round of 16, especially, you know, coming to the end of that fairly hectic winter period, I think that's going to be pretty useful for us.
Yeah, it's really interesting you mentioned about City maybe not being a two-legged team. Nigel, is that a view you share?
Well, I think the Champions League, we know we've not got to a final. It is kind of the monkey on our back, if you like, as people say. And it's a competition with the investment the clubs have that we've got to win at some point. And my concern is that we're not playing with the fluidity that we have the last couple of seasons in the Premier League. Mm. And, you know, to sort of only get a, you know, 1-1 draw in the last round at home is, you know, you're looking for City to sort of put teams like that away. And it is a concern because... I think, as Dave has said, you know, the next round, the last game in the group rather, we've got an opportunity to play the kids in that game, yeah, because it's a case of
it's a dead rubber, you know, it is one of those games where we really don't need to force it out. You know, we can play Eric Garcia. We can give him that chance. You know, maybe he's an answer for something at centre-back. You know, we've got guys like Phil Foden who are getting quite a lot of minutes anyway, but he's someone who can really come on, maybe show a little bit more what he can do. You know, Zagreb will be up for it. It's the biggest tie they're getting in their ground this season. And, you know, we've got other players. Well, you know, you've got Taylor Howard-Bellis, another young centre-half, maybe the answer gives a bit more height. And then there's always someone who comes out of these games who, you know, gets the fans that little bit excited. So I think that Zagreb game, incidentally, might be a really good one to watch for us, just to see, you know, who that next generation of player are and who we can sort of catapult into one of these first team roles.
Yeah, definitely. We had Roger Reed on the show recently. He was talking about that next generation in the squad. It was such an interesting chat. David, you mentioned that City maybe haven't taken to the Champions League so far, and also the fans. Why the fans? What did you mean by that?
I think there's always been a bit of antagonism between Manchester City and UEFA. Of course, the main sort of thing to this is the booing of the Champions League anthem. A lot of people point this to FFP. I think a lot of it actually goes back to an instance in Moscow where CSKA Moscow were meant to play behind an empty, you know, behind
closed doors.
For racism-related offence, and obviously City fans were not allowed in as well. A lot of CSKA fans seem to be in that ground, and I think from there we've kind of felt that a few things have been run in a way that hasn't necessarily taken the fans to heart. You know, we can all think of our own little gripes we have with the football authorities, but for one reason or another, the Premier League has always been the thing that set the Etihad alight. You know, the Spurs game maybe marked a bit of a change to that last season because people got really up for that, and probably, I don't know about you, Nigel, but for me, it was one of the best games of football I've ever seen live. And I think that's, you know, I think there's still a little bit of winning the fans
Premier League opposition.
I think it is probably one of the best games. I think also it's probably one of the games that I've gone from the highest high to the lowest low as well within 30 seconds. And, you know, we don't want to talk about VAR every week. But, you know, that's when that Sterling goal went in, which said City are through, having thought there was no way this was going to happen, to then suddenly have it sort of snatched away.
I was with you with that highest high and the lowest low. Let me tell you.
Unbelievable. And to be in the stadium and hugging people who I'd sort of never seen in my life before from three rows back, to suddenly you're sitting there, and it's just and that's what the game's all about, isn't it? That emotional roller coaster that you go on. It was a fantastic game.
I'm still not over that.
Yeah, he's still not over it. You mentioned it. Obviously, it says is winning the Champions League more essential now, as that third consecutive Premier League title is looking unlikely. But I don't think it changes at all whether it's more essential. We know City want to win this. That we know they want to be champions of Europe. We know Pep wants this. So it doesn't really change it. It maybe means that City, I don't want to say put their eggs in that specific basket, but it doesn't really change it on the face of it, does it?
I don't think it does. And I think if you ask any City fan, I think, and I've said this many times, that I think most City fans will say we'd rather win three Premier Leagues first. Yeah. Let's get that, because not many teams do that. And yes, of course, we need to win the Champions League, but I don't think it's a kind of a do or die. I don't think Pep will be seen as a bad manager if City don't win the Champions League this year. I think he's got enough in the bank from what he's done over the last two or three seasons to say he's a fantastic fantastic manager and will go down as one of City's best ever managers. But I'm pretty convinced that over the next few years, it's something that will happen. We all know in a cup competition, you know, it's very fine margins. And we just talked about the Spurs game. If there's fine margins, then there it is for you. So I don't think it's the end of Manchester City if we don't win the Champions League this year. It won't be a terrible disaster. We've got Port Vale in the FA Cup, of course. That's just been drawn tonight. So
yeah.
That's a good draw for us. I know we're not talking about the FA Cup.
But it was drawn tonight, the FA Cup for Ran City at home to Port Vale. Really tough fixture for City there. No disrespect to Port Vale. It's interesting because we know how much City want to win the Champions League, but we know how, you know, City want to win every trophy they're in, the four cups, you know, trying to get as many trophies and how hard they work towards this. Is there a case then that maybe weirdly in some world, if we can go there, that this has a positive effect that maybe they're not in the title race where, you know, they're not fully pedal to the floor on the weekend and it helps them in the Champions League because sometimes they're going so guns at
Charlie,
it in the Premier League.
Charlie, you're listening to David Hodgson saying we're not in. Who says we're not in the Premier League title race? That's Dave Hodgson.
Sorry,
language.
Persuasive influence.
Yeah. So I'm telling you,
Dave's a charming guy. I'm just completely under the aroma.
He's a nice lad. He's wrong though. So we are still in the Premier League.
Right, let's take it to a deluded world.
Okay.
Let's go live in Dave Hodgson land for a second.
Really?
Yeah.
We got
just for a quick minute.
Oh, dear.
Let's indulge Dave's theory. If we're not going for the Premier, not that we're not going for it. If we find ourselves 15, 16 points back, and it's February. Does the Champions League, maybe because we know City can't get over the line, look at Spurs, they weren't doing much in the league, got to that European Cup final. Do you understand what I'm saying, Dave? Because he's interrupting me. Don't let him talk.
I think it's going to put more pressure. I think that's potentially going to put more pressure on us. Because
fair.
Let's say we're in you know, David Land.
Great place.
Is it really? I don't want to go there, to be honest. But if let's just say I am there,
yeah.
I think actually, potentially, people say, right, it's Liverpool's title, City are out of it, you've now got to win the Champions League. That's the potential danger of that, in my view. I don't know what you think, Dave. I keep interrupting, so I'll shut up now.
I have a feeling that it doesn't particularly matter either way. I think I do kind of think that part of what I did say this time last season was probably broadly wrong, that if Liverpool got to the Champions League they'd lose the league, etc, etc. Of course Liverpool didn't actually drop points in that run in and nor did we, so I can't really say the Champions League was a deciding factor, but a little bit of me did think if we had got to the later stages of that, we had a two-legged tie against Ajax in the middle of that run, you know, maybe that goal against Leicester hadn't gone in. So I do think there is that little bit of the fact that there's competing resources, our squad's been a little bit stretched anyway this season, even though it is quite a deep squad, we've had injuries in very particular places. I'm quite worried that we wouldn't be able to sustain that, but that said, you know, I think I'd stand by that. I'd rather we win the Premier League and the Champions League this season.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But if we can win the Champions League, assuming the Premier League's out of sight, I think that would be the redeemer on a season and we could still sit down and call it one of the great seasons in our club's history. So the Champions League does take on a little bit more importance.
The troubles at your club are always relative to your club. It's quite incredible, really. You know,
these are not troubles by our club standards.
I laughed at myself earlier. I always do, but I just thought we're talking about where is it going wrong for City, the goals, and I thought to myself, this is a team that are the defending champions twice. Premier League champions in a row, top their Champions League group, and we're talking about where's it going wrong? And I thought they're second in the league. It's quite extraordinary, really, that we're talking about this. But Nigel, the point I'm trying to make is that, do you think potentially that title race last year, so, you know, intense as it was, maybe has caused City to have slightly a bigger hangover than Liverpool having this? It maybe took more out of them than it did Liverpool.
Listen, that's very possible. As you say, the tension and the effort that went in to put that run of games towards the end of the season to get us over the line. And, of course, it means that Liverpool wanted even more. It's 29, 30 years since they won the top flight division. So they're desperate to win this. And I'm not saying that City have a complacent streak at all, but it is very difficult to maintain that level of standard over three seasons. It's very, very difficult. So yeah, I mean, listen, Liverpool are having a fantastic run. You've got to give credit to Klopp and the team he's got. It's going to be very interesting, though. I think this December period is going to be very, very interesting. We're going to have fixtures, a fixture backlog. They've just had one injury in midfield. There may well be others around the corner. I wouldn't wish that on any professional, of course, but they've had the rub of the green. They've had very few injuries. So it's going to be very, as these fixtures pile up, it's going to be very interesting to see how they cope in December.
Just quickly, David, talk of fixture pile up. They're piling up for Liverpool, you know. They're playing in that Club World Cup. They're already moaning about this 18 games in however many days it is or whatever. Could we see the Liverpool slump there and City get back into it?
It's very possible. And there are areas of their squad where I look at it and go, are they so deep up front, for example, behind that front three? How strong are they? I mean, Origi, Shaqiri, they're not quite the same quality of players. But, you know, you talk about this pile up. I think pile up maybe matters slightly more on us at the moment, because we are kind of, a lot of our squad is, you know, the core of the squad is still the same that's won all these four Premier League titles. You know, you've got, you know, your Gueros, your Silvers, your Fernandinhos, you know, these players who, Fernandinho didn't win the first one, but, you know, that core of players who are getting on a bit, we still rely on them quite a lot, and that, you know, it takes out of them a little bit more. Liverpool have got a young, very, very physically well-conditioned squad who seem to be, you know, quite good at avoiding these injuries. So I think Liverpool, this fixture list is going to test their limits, but they've got a squad that's maybe better placed to weather it than we do.
Yeah, it's such an interesting debate we're having in the studio. You can have your say. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. We're going to be talking about the value of a Manchester City as a football club, because they become the most valuable football club in the world, valued at over 3 billion. Love Sport. You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. Joined in the studio were Nigel Rothband and Dave Hodgson. We were talking about City topping their group in the Champions League. Despite that draw, they have a 5-point breathing space gap then. And talking about the game of Newcastle on the weekend, which was 2-2. We will be talking to Dave Roberts from the No Nay Never podcast about the Burnley game tomorrow night. But first, we have a brilliant opportunity to talk about Man City now, as they become the most valuable football club in the world, valued at over 3 billion, and the perfect man is in the studio to talk about it. No, it's not me. It certainly isn't Nigel.
Correct.
But it is David Hodgson, because David, this is your world. This is your field. We're in your world a lot tonight, but you are the man in the know when it comes to this.
Well,
pressure.
you piled it on me now. I work as a financial analyst, and I just thought I'd run through a little bit some of the impact of what's gone on in the last week at Manchester City, not in terms of the football, but in terms of the business, because we've seen a transaction that I think's rather surprised a lot of people, because it hadn't been, there's not been that much like it in English football to date. And it's kind of something that's kind of come a bit out of the blue, and it's Silver Lake, the US sort of private equity technology investor, you know, and really well known in the space of technology, sort of Silicon Valley royalty, you know, known for big deals in space with, you know, names like Dell, Alibaba in China. You know, they are very well known investors, but they've decided to take a 10% stake in Manchester City Football Club, in the City Football Group, which owns Manchester City Football Club, for $500 million. So this is not, you know, a big, you know, buyout in the way we saw with the Sheikh. This is someone coming in with a minority investment to say, you know, we want some of the investment upside from this. We don't want to necessarily run the thing. They've got a guy on the board, but they're not going to take full control. And, you know, that this is a bit of a different deal for the football space.
So what's in it for them then, Dave? So as an investor in the States, as you say, Silver Lake, what's in it for them then? Why would they be investing in Manchester, in the group?
Well, these guys will be coming into football space for one reason, and they won't necessarily be viewing it like football. They'll be viewing it as an investment in entertainment. You know, these guys have got positions in names like UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the Miss Universe pageant. They have sort of entertainment-based exposure. They'll be looking at it very simply because they think this is a good place where they can get return on the capital they've invested. This isn't here because they love the game. It's not like, you know, Freddie Shepherd or Jack Walker back in the day pumping money into the local team. We are an asset to them that they can maybe help grow a little bit, use some of their platforms and contacts to help us grow. You know, they've said that they want this money to go into, you know, the technology platform, fund international business growth opportunities, and further the infrastructure around these clubs. And to be honest, I think where they're really going with this is they're looking at the emerging market opportunities we have. We've got, you know...
China and India
and places like that, exactly like that. You know, the Manchester City brand is good because it's starting to catch on in these markets. Still got a bit of catching up to do, but it's got some room for growth there. But the real growth opportunities are coming from those emerging markets.
And in terms of that money coming into the club, so I understand it. I mean, this is not my area at all. Mm-hmm. I don't know how a wheelbarrow works, never mind any of this stuff. So in terms of the money, what will the club use that money for? Is it kind of all about the infrastructure? Is it about that whole sort of campus around the Etihad? Is that kind of what that money will be used for, do you think?
I'm not so sure how much Manchester City Football Club will see of this. Remember, this is an investment in City Football Group. So the valuation we talk about this year is $4.8 billion that this transaction implies, the value of the group. This isn't just Manchester City. This is the broader opportunity. So I think some of this money, well, we know some of this money has gone into the buyout of a club in India, Mumbai City, in the Indian Super League. We imagine that some of this money will be used to build up Sichuan Zhengzhou, who are our Chinese third division team that we've bought up. Maybe some will go to New York City, helping them find the new ground that they've been looking to do. Again, New York, not the cheapest place to build a stadium, but, you know, Yankees have not been keeping things particularly cheap for us either, so it's something that they're going to look for. So I would say this is more about building infrastructure, building technology, and growing these international brands more than Manchester City.
The purchase of Mumbai City is an interesting one, because as I understand it, the sort of football in India, I mean, obviously they've got a lot of work to do to trump cricket over there, of course, which isn't a religion, not a sport, of course, as we know. It's kind of a bit different there, isn't it, how they support their teams, as I understand it. It kind of tends to be they've got favourite players and they move around a little bit. When we've got, you know, you change your car, you change your wife, you never change your football team. but it's kind of not like that. It's not like that in India, as I understand it.
No. India is a very different market, as is China, in that a lot of people might support five or six clubs, which I know the thought of that just... You know, it just does not strike with how I've learned to think. You know, City through and through, you know, that's your club. You don't have others. You know, they might have five different teams they like, certain players they absolutely love. And that player, you know, Messi or Ronaldo, they might be a fan of that player and watch everything he does. If he moves, they move with it. So, but the main thing that drives this is there is growth in the middle class and there's growth in their economy. And the sort of merchandising power, you know, being able to get fans not only supporting Manchester City, not only supporting that team and growing those teams as a presence there, that's what's going to drive the investment that brings it in.
David, maybe a little too early to tell, but is there any potentially negative sides of this deal? Should there be any fears or concerns for fans? Because sometimes when we hear about, you know, an investor, you said it's come very left field, you know, we don't know much about them. For fans who won't know about Silver Lake and the Silicon Valley, they think, where does this mean us for fans? Are they trying to take over? Will they want to say at a later date? I know you said they're on the board and they don't want to say now. Could this potentially change? Will they look to invest more? Is there any room for this?
Well, what I would say here is they have one guy on the board, yes, but like I've said, they're a technology-based investment. Yeah, they might think they know a lot about technology. They probably know that the football market is very different. They're not going to want to impose too much on that, I would imagine, and they'll let the guys who know how to run football businesses run football businesses. I wouldn't be too worried as a fan. I think this is a sign that things are going right. And the other thing, you know, I've been discussing with people is, to me, this is a really good sign on FFP as well. Not just because... Well, not at all, because I don't think any of this money could be used for FFP purposes. Otherwise, the Sheikh would have just, you know, issued stocks and bought them back himself, and that would have got around the whole problem. But what this does say, you know, these are canny guys. These guys will have done a lot of research into the investment before they've made it. I don't think they'd be making this investment if the club were gearing up for a massive FFP fine or Champions League exclusion or anything like that. So for me, I take quite a lot of heart from that, that it's just, they view this well. But when coming back to how's this going to change the running of the club, I don't think it is. I think it's going to help the club in certain strategic areas in the markets they're expanding into.
I mean, what I find unbelievable, sort of having sort of going back a few more years than both you young men in this studio with me, and knowing that crumbling old ground at Main Road where we were languishing in the third tier of English football, and to be sitting here today in this studio and knowing that Manchester City Football Club is literally the wealthiest football club in the world, it's, for me, it's just mind-blowing. It's just incredible. And it just shows what... you know, the vision of one individual and the money's helped, but it's not just about the football club, as Dave said. It's about the group. It's about the infrastructure that's been built, you know, the women's team, the academy, the stadia around Manchester, the employment of local people. You know, it's really been a very special time, and it's just an amazing business model. You know, to go from where we were to where we are now is just very special.
Absolutely. I mean, I have some qualms with the methodology of saying we're the most valuable football club in the world. For me, what a lot of this deal says is that people had been underpricing football assets. I know Forbes do this annual valuation. You know, they had City at something like $2.7 billion. Obviously, this implies Football Group's 4.8. I don't think another $2 billion's coming from our other club, so it implies that City's worth a lot more. And indeed, on the day we were bought, you saw Manchester United stock, I think, went up 14%, you know, because people are saying, well, maybe we're all mispricing football assets. People are prepared to bid up. People see the opportunities there. But we're talking about ourselves, not just in footballing terms, as playing the likes of Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man United. We are talking about ourselves as a financial power in that same way. We all worried when the investment came in from the Sheikh that, is he going to leave us high and dry? Are we not going to be able to, you know, if he pulls the money out, are we going to be struggling? This is a sign that this is starting to take on a life of its own. This is a business that's standing on its own two feet. It's not just the plaything of, you know, some benevolent Sheikh. It's a business that's running really well of its own right.
And as I understand it, if somebody came in and say, for example, bought Barcelona today, it could well be that when they're bought, they potentially could be valued better, greater than Manchester City, I suspect, as well. It's a bit like we were discussing before, it's a bit like buying a house, isn't it? Yeah. If your house hasn't been valued for 20 years and someone comes and buys it, it's obviously going to be worth an awful lot more than what you paid for it.
Yeah, and also, if you really like the house, you're going to pay up for it as well. You know, sometimes it's a case of finding the right buyer at the right time. These things are often valued on all sorts of different metrics, you know, multiples of sales, or just, you know, if someone came in who really wanted that asset, they could push that up again. If they think it links it with other things they've got, it will work that way.
Well, what's next, Dave, do you think? So I mean, this is just an amazing story, as I've said, and we've got this group now, and we've got these teams around the globe. What, from your experience, what could happen next? What does the next 20 years look like potentially for Manchester City, the group?
Well, let's not forget we've also had some Chinese stake. A Chinese stake was bought in a slightly different way a few years back. I think we may see a couple of other people want to do that, want to come in and invest some money. It depends whether the Sheikh would want to sell any more. His stake is down to 77%. Yeah. One thing I would flag is that the way these things kind of work is that these guys may want to sell at some point when they think they can get a better price. So we may find we have a few, maybe more. Yeah, there may be a chance that they end up wanting to sell, whether they sell out to the Sheikh, whether that means maybe at some points you have a City Football Group might get listed on the stock market. You know, there's lots of different options. Yeah. But at the moment, what I take from this, there's interest in this club. They think they're doing something right. Let's keep this going.
Well, they are doing something right because Manchester City Football Club is valued at over $3 billion. What a chat with David Hodgson there, just giving you an insight into the financial deals at the minute with City. Unbelievable vision from the club, talking about the deal with the private American equity firm Silver Lake. Well, we turn our attentions back to the football on the pitch. This time it is Burnley tomorrow night, and Dave Roberts from No Name Never will be joining us.
Love Sport.
That's time. It is time for the opposition view on the Manchester City Fan Show. Still joined by the Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband and David Hodgson, talking everything where the citizens are concerned. We look towards their game tomorrow night, and it is against Burnley. Delighted to say Dave Roberts from No Nay Never podcast joins us now. Dave, obviously a big, big contest tomorrow night. Burnley not getting the result against the Eagles on the weekend. Now they face the defending champions. What are you making of this contest?
It's going to be a tough one, as we know. Manchester City, big side coming to Turf Moor. But we know we're capable of getting results against the bigger teams coming to play against us. We've done it in seasons past. Going back a few seasons, we had a 1-0 victory. George Boyd scored a goal. We got a 1-0. I think City had a tough game at Turf Moor last season, right towards the end of the season, wasn't it? Late April. Managed to get a goal. One just sneaked over the line. I think the goal line technology, wasn't it, that gave the goal in the end. Manchester City got a 1-0 win, and we had a 1-1 I think the season before that. So we've had some decent results against City. We've struggled at when we've gone to Manchester, but I think at Turf Moor we've not done too bad. So I think under the lights, Tuesday night, I think it'll be a good atmosphere. I think Burnley will, do what Burnley do, really. We know how we play. We play to our strengths. Sean Dyche will have the players well organised, and I'm sure it'll be a good game.
I have to say, we're a bit worried here in this studio, Dave. Our run of results recently, we could only draw in Europe. We only drew away at Newcastle, and clearly we're kind of leaking goals in sort of looking at City standards, and we're probably not scoring enough at the other end either. So I can understand why maybe you fancy your chances. And clearly, Dyche will have your team well drilled, won't they? I mean, you said you know where your strengths are. Where do you think your best chances are against City then? Where do you think you're going to win the game, or at least get a point out of it?
I think set pieces. I think we've played to our strengths on set pieces. Had quite a good few goals from corners this season as well. That's been one of our strengths. I think the front two, they weren't firing on Saturday, but in the rest of the season they've done really well. Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood up front, when they play as a team, they do give defenders problems, and I know City have got some defensive problems. They're not keeping clean sheets, so it might be a good time to play Manchester City with Fernandinho in central defence, and he was sent off, wasn't he, a few seasons back when we played at the Etihad.
He was indeed. And where do you see sort of your particular strengths then as a side? I mean, you mentioned one or two individuals, and I always think of Sean Dyche and a really disciplined outfit that we're going to be facing at Turf Moor. But who should City be looking out for in particular, do you think?
Well, you're right. There is a team ethic, and I think we've built from the back, and we've got playing to strength up front. I think Dwight McNeil, in terms of singling players out, he's just turned 20, he's a real prospect. He's come through the youth ranks. I think we got him from, actually he was released by Manchester United at the age of 14. He's been at Burnley ever since, and he's got into the team, sort of been a regular really the last half of last season and into this season. He's one of the first names on the team sheet now. He's a real talent. He's playing for England under 21s, and I think he's going to go even further. So he's one to look out for, perhaps. But I think you're right, the team setup and the team ethic will be something that Sean Dyche will have drilled into the players. They all know the roles. It won't be an easy game for us, we know that. Whoever comes to Turf Moor, Premier League games are always difficult, and especially likes of Manchester City. But sometimes there can be a good time to play teams, and we'll be hoping that maybe City can drop a notch, Burnley can play to their top level, and it'll be a good contest on Tuesday night.
And from a City point of view, obviously we've mentioned our injuries. We know Aguero's out. He's out for the game at the weekend as well. He's not going to be fit for that. We've lost Sarney for most of the season. Laporte's not going to be back until the new year. So it's been well documented the number of injuries City have had. But who do you fear most then from the Sky Blues then coming to Turf Moor tomorrow?
Well, I probably would have said Aguero, because he has a habit of scoring against us. He has done in quite a few games.
Scores so against everybody.
Well, he scores particularly against Burnley. He's got a hatful against us in the past, so we won't be too disappointed he won't be playing. But, I mean, we know City have got strength in depth, and the likes of Burnley don't have the resources that the likes of Manchester City have in terms of the finances and the players they brought in. So we know City have got other players that can step up and play in the side as well. Kevin De Bruyne, we know, is a world-class player. Sterling, there's just a whole host of players who can make it really, really difficult for you on the day. So whichever 11 City put out, we know that Burnley are going to be up against it. But we know that equally on our day, on our own ground, under the lights on a Tuesday night, it'll be a good atmosphere, a good game, and hopefully we can make it 3 points.
So, Dave, if you were Sean Dyche and you're saying you want to go out and you want to beat Manchester City on Tuesday, how would you set up? How are you going to tell your players to play? Is it to go for it, to exploit our weaknesses, or is it to sit back and defend? How would you go about it?
I think we'll be cautious to begin with. We'll go out gung-ho and try all out from the first minute. I think that would be a dangerous tactic against the likes of City. We do like to frustrate sides. I think Pep's come out as well. He's been quite complimentary about Burnley, again, playing to the team's strengths. So he knows what he's up against. And as I say, the games at Manchester City, we've taken some beatings there, but the games at Turf Moor have been a lot tighter. So I think we'll be looking to keep it tight and maybe try and profit from set pieces, which will be one avenue, certainly, that we can try and exploit on Tuesday.
Well, I'd certainly say that. I mean, set pieces do worry us. We're one of the shortest teams in the league, and, you know, we certainly look suspect with that. You know, of course, you know, the last goal against Newcastle, we conceded against Newcastle, was a set piece, and, yeah, that is something that's certainly worrying me going into the next game. But if to flip that question around a sec, if you were Pep Guardiola, you know, with your knowledge of Burnley, what are the things that you think we can exploit from Burnley, the sort of weaknesses they have that Manchester City could exploit?
Difficult to say, really. I think we didn't have a good game against Crystal Palace on Saturday. They came out to frustrate us. In fact, they almost flipped it around. They played more Burnley-like in terms of saying, well, you know, we're going to sit back a little bit and we're going to try and hit you on the break. We're going to try and get shots in and get the goals from perhaps the angles you're not going to expect them to. And they sort of Burnley'd us, really. They, if you look at the expected goals and the way that the game panned out, they had two shots on goal and they scored them both. But on the end of the day, they really, really did what Burnley do to a lot of other sides, and similar to what we did perhaps to Watford the previous week. So it's difficult. I mean, Manchester City are capable of playing through and beating Burnley if they play to their very best. You'd probably expect them to, but equally, it's one of those games where, yeah, Manchester City perhaps have a few difficulties in terms of the players they've got available. If Burnley can put their best side out and play a little bit better than we did on Saturday, then we're more than capable of getting a result against City.
Well, you're saying you're more than capable of getting a result. What is your score prediction for tomorrow, Dave?
I think it might be a draw. I'm going to go for a 1-1.
1-1. Oh, you're getting at Burnley another point and another draw for City. Always a pleasure to have you on. Dave Roberts there from the No Nay Never podcast. Nigel, he's saying that draw, it just keeps continuing for City. 1-1. How is the game playing out for you?
Well, do you know what? I find it difficult to disagree with Dave. I think that Dyche will have them well drilled, well disciplined. It's not an easy place to go. I think Dave's absolutely right what he said. They're a big, strong side. I think set pieces, they're dangerous. They've got height. We haven't. And I think, you know, it's going to be, he's gone 1-1. I'm going to go 2-2, which I hate doing. But I do think that Burnley will put in a great performance. And if I had to put money on it, I'm going 2-2.
Wow, a repeat of the 2-2 on Saturday against Newcastle. David, do you agree with that?
I think I'd say it's going to be worse. I can see us losing this. I can really see us losing this. I think we've not got the confidence right now brimming through the team.
This is the Man City fan show, isn't it? It's not the Burnley fan show, right? Just checking. What is that? You're spending far too much time in David land. You've stayed.
I've gone. It's gone.
Sorry, David.
People keep forgetting our gallows humour. I mean, you know, but it's a difficult one. You know, they know what our weaknesses are, and it plays perfectly to their strength. They know if you put the ball in the box, you know, they're going to put, you know, Chris Ward or someone on Fernandinho, who's, you know, 5'8" centre half. He's good in the air, but he's not going to be winning those. They, I think, are going to be able to really put pressure on us and get us worried, and I think it's going to be 1-0 Burnley.
1-0 Burnley. What a way. We can't end like that. Nigel, we need to have the last word. What's the last word? We can't end it on a 1-0 to Burnley.
No, 2-2. Well, the last word is because we've got the weekend as well before we come back on Monday. We're going to play another game. And even if we've got a couple of minutes now, I'm not sure how we've got. We're obviously playing for the team from just outside Manchester. They're going to come to the Etihad. And I'm feeling more confident about that one, actually. I do think, you know, they are in trouble. I think, you know, they're deep-rooted brilliantly. There are some deep-rooted problems there. We think we've got problems. And as you quite rightly said, we haven't really. We hold four trophies. Yeah, we're in four competitions still. We won one of them already, of course. So no, I think against the Reds from just outside Manchester, I think we'll be all right. I've got 3-1 on that one.
3-1, go on then, David.
2-0 City.
2-0 City.
Much easier than Burnley.
Brilliant result on the weekend, which will mean another brilliant show next Monday, as it always is, because we get to talk about City every Monday, 9 to 10, right here on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Stay-
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.